Welcome to episode 84 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your host Tish and Dr. T. In this episode, we debate whether NRL coaches should be fined criticising referees, whether Andrew Fifita should watch State of Origin this year, our choices for the Hall of Fame, as well as our tips for round 10 of the NRL. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. All right, welcome to episode 84 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to build an online rugby league community for everybody. Each week, we bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the biggest news and issues in the world of rugby league and break it all down for you in our own unique way. I am your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me, Tish. How are you going this week, Tish?
Well, Dr. T, I'm doing good. Just want to warn NRL referees, yes, I am a West Tigers player, so... feel free to sin bin me, like you're sin binning all of our players. But other than that, you know, I'm looking forward to the 2019 season because I think the Tigers are gone for the year.
Wow, that's a big call. Are you sure about that? They're in the top five.
They are. But like, you know, what's happening? You know, three in a row. I just don't know. Have we signed Jared Hayne or something? Like, not. Oh, no, that's been like that. But look, but it's been good to see, you know, some of the, you know, I think the table, again, we talked about it being sort of, a surprise this year, but some of the teams that have been winning all of a sudden started losing. Some of the teams that are losing started to win, and now it's kind of contracted the NRL ladder again, and it's just really exciting. And plus all the Origin talk, around the corner, Origin not too far away now. People trying to figure out who are going to be the lineups. There's plenty of players that have sort of, retired or ineligible to play this year. So all of a sudden, there's lots of spots up for grabs and everybody seems to be talking about it. But we probably won't be talking about it tonight.
Fair enough. But look, just so...
How you been, Dr. T?
Oh, well, you know... The same as usual. The Eels have back to their losing ways. They had a chance to put a win up there against the Sharks. They unfortunately left their run a bit too late, but you know, too little, too late. And so they're still absolute dead last. Whereas had they won, let me tell you, they would have jumped to possibly 13th place. So they would have leapfrogged three teams with
wow.
Only two more points again. Three more points against the Sharks is all they needed. And just to give you a sense of how tight the competition is, we've got 7 teams. Is that right? 4, 5, 6. Yep, 7 teams on 10 points.
Wow.
From 4th to 10th, we've got Storm, Rabbitohs, Roosters, Tigers, Sharks, Broncos, Knights, equal on 10 points. The Storm has the biggest for and against, so they're at 4th. But, you know, and above them, Panthers at 12, Warriors at 14, Dragons at 16, on top of the table, easily defeating the Storm, which we're no doubt we'll talk about in a minute. But, look, the ladder is so congested. I'll tell you what, it's more congested than my nose was for the last week or so. I think the ladder needs some decongestant. I don't know what that is, but it needs a doctor referral because something's going on with the NRL this year. It's a bit sick, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but it's also making for great rugby league, right? Because the teams are so evenly matched this year.
Oh, well, that's one way to look at it. Look, all I've got to say is, from the Eels' perspective, we are still in the hunt for a finals berth.
That's so right.
So do not give up on your Tigers, Tish, because they are coming 7th, but they're not that far from the top either. So, you know. Look, before we head off into our six tackles, let's actually quickly review the results for round 9. So Broncos defeated the Bulldogs, controversially, I must say, 22-20, and we'll talk about that. Actually, two of our debates are about that that game, controversially. The Knights lost to the Rabbitohs 36-18. The Cowboys defeated the Panthers, bit of an upset, 26-20. Raiders defeating the Titans 32-18. The Warriors flogging the Tigers 26-4. The Sharks pipping the Eels 22-20. And the Dragons, this was probably the match of the year so far. In terms of really highlighting who are the premiership contenders, Dragons flogged the Storm 34-14. I think the win wasn't unexpected, but the manner in which they did it was. So well done to the Dragons for, you know, perhaps claiming outright premiership favoritism at the moment. The Roosters 22-20, again, not much of a strong sort of effort there compared to the Dragons for a team that was the premiership favourites. But anyway, so those are the results for the for round 9. So let's get into the 6 tackles, shall we? All right, tackle number 1. The Great Mate Debate Part 1, should NRL coaches be fined for criticising referees' performances? So after the Broncos win against the Bulldogs fans, the most of the people on the internet and Dean Pay were livid that the Broncos got away with so much, so many refereeing decisions. And the Dean Pay, as coach of the of the Bulldogs, decided to give the referees a bit of a spray, claiming that some of the decisions were ridiculous, things like that. Nothing too out of the ordinary compared to what we've heard from other coaches in the past. But he was fined. I think it was $20,000 or $25,000, a really massive amount. He was fined for dissent and criticizing the referee. So the question here is, Tish, should the NRL coaches be fined for criticizing referees' performances, or is that crossing the line of freedom of speech within the NRL? So where do we go from here?
So the question is, am I for or against freedom of speech?
sort of. So are you for or against the fining of referees?
I will look. I'm going to argue the for, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay. Go for it.
Okay. All right. Look, yes, I know there is freedom of speech. Yes, I understand that, referees make silly, wrong decisions. Yes, I know that referee decisions do cost teams the game. And clearly example, the Tigers had 2 sin bin players in their game. One that was obviously a clear one, but the second one was because of excessive penalties where, the referees felt that the Tigers were giving away too many penalties, and as a result, somebody had to go sit in the bin, which meant that for 60 minutes of the game, we had to play with 12 players, and that's why we got flogged. And on top of all that, at the end of the day, the penalty count between the Warriors and the Tigers was exactly the same. So when there was a string of penalties from the Warriors' point of view, there was no send-offs. So then you think, how is that fair? And I could see Ivan Cleary being upset. And of course, I could see Dean Pay being upset by some of the disgraceful, calls that he's sort of mentioned. But I think with anything, if you've got strong ideas and strong opinions, there you've got to be prepared to take the accountability for that. We can't have we can't have coaches constantly going out there and blaming the result on the referee. The referees themselves probably need to take a bit more ownership of the decisions, but that's on the referees. But I think the coaches need to worry about how they play the game, how they train their players, and they need to worry about what they're in charge of, which is their teams. I also feel that I do have a bit of sympathy for the coaches in a way as well, because they are putting to a sort of a high pressure situation, having to front the media and all these cameras and microphones straight after the game where you really want to be more sort of with your team. So maybe they need to change the way they sort of do these press conferences. But overall, I don't think the referees should get a free pass when, when just sort of emotionally blaming the referee, when the reality is, nine times out of ten, the correct team is one based on the performance of the players and not the referees themselves. So, look, all for freedom of speech, but I think there's consequences for certain things you say, and I think a consequence of a fine should apply to referees, Dr. T.
Look, very convincing, somewhat convincing. However, I would argue that, look, yes, there needs to be accountability. So we can't just sort of allow people to sort of willy-nilly, make defamatory statements about individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Fair enough. However, I think a bit of balance needs to be brought into this equation. I think an NRL coach says anything, critically about the referee's performances, even so far as to say, they think decisions were ridiculous, blah, 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 whatever, then that seems to warrant a fine. And I think the NRL is absolutely too heavy-handed in that respect. I think what would be a fairer approach would be to say, look, you can criticize the referees. I mean, look, what's the difference between an NRL coach and, say, member of the public or the media or things like that? You can argue, I think, that you disagree with the referee's decisions and maybe you're really upset about it. Fair enough. But to me, the line needs to be drawn not there. It needs to be drawn a bit further out, which is basically the point where, the coaches start casting aspersions on the character of the referee. So if you're just pointing out that there were mistakes and it was ridiculous and the referee, had a bad game, I think it's fair enough to allow that kind of criticism of performance. What I don't think it's fair is if people take it the next step further and say, clearly there's a bias against us by the referees, or clearly they're being paid to do this. Clearly they're favouring the Storm. That kind of thing, I think, implies a judgment and a defamatory judgment of someone's character, even if it's implicit and not really kind of, Matt Checken did this and he favours the Tigers or whatever. Like, even if it's not that, even if it's just saying, I think they're treating us unfairly, well, that's kind of like, well, who exactly? And why are you saying that? The conspiracy type statements, I think, is where the line should be drawn. I think to find a coach for, in the heat of a moment, sort of saying, look, I just was so angry. Clearly they were wrong, those decisions. I think it's not really fair. And I think you're right. There's a freedom. With freedom comes responsibility and accountability. And as employees of the NRL, you might sort of argue, well, this is an employee-employee relationship and you can't really criticize your employer. But they're not. They're criticizing another branch of the organization. And they're criticizing performance rather than saying that it's about, I guess there's a difference between saying, what's happened is misconduct versus what's happened is mistakes or incompetence. I think you should be allowed to say referees are incompetent. You shouldn't be allowed to say they're doing something dodgy or fraudulent. Okay. So I'm gonna end it there. I think that's my line. The neat line needs to be shifted, but I'll give you the last word.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to point out, so you do agree that fines are warranted, except you believe that the line should be a bit more further out than where it is now.
Yeah, I think it's not a strict black or white thing. I think it needs to be nuanced. But the reason why I'm saying that is that it's not about criticizing their performances. So no, I don't think they should be fined for that. I think they should be fined for defamatory statements.
Okay,
fair enough.
Okay, well, I think a lot of the criticisms that the referees do get is because of the grey areas of rugby league. So I think the criticising rugby league players, criticising referees and their performance, I don't think should be a nuanced thing. I think it should be a clear sort of set of guidelines, because we already have so much unclearness, and I think that is probably where the frustration of most players, fans, coaches are. I think that also we don't want to get into a situation where we want referees to make decisions. We don't want referees to be frightened of making a bad decision over the fact of policing the game properly. I think at the moment, the referees, they're sort of a bit all over the place when it comes to, you see sometimes they're very strong in their decision making. Other times, it's just like that they themselves seem fatigued and panicked. And I think we've just created this environment where, they're probably the most scrutinized area out of everybody. And it's difficult under pressure to make decisions. And it's even more difficult when you have the weight of the competition on your shoulders at times. So, I think I don't know where we are with this debate, but I just think that, we need to support players. We need to support coaches. Maybe they should talk it out. Maybe we should get them together, maybe on a talk show, to talk about their differences. We could get Jerry Springer to host it, see what comes out of it.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. I'm going to call that a draw, though. Okay. I think we're not really going to agree. But, all right, let's move on to tackle number two. Probably a less serious note. The Great Mate Debate Part 2. Should Andrew Fifita watch State of Origin this year? So there was an article in the NRL.com website where they talked to Andrew Fifita, and obviously his controversial decision to turn his back on State of Origin owing to his allegiance to Tonga, the nation of Tonga, and I think he's to be applauded for that. But this particular debate is about a comment he made about how he doesn't really, he's not really going to watch State of Origin this year, because I guess he's sort of thinking, well, I can't sort of stand to watch something where I thought, I guess he's probably too invested in it, or he feels like he could have been out there playing, but obviously he's made a decision, he's going to stick to it. So I thought this was a good opportunity to see if we can convince Fifita, should he watch it or should he not watch it? What do you think? Should he stay away from watching State of Origin, or should he be made to watch it? Should we try encourage him, shall we say?
Okay, well, I'll let you have the floor of to watch or not to watch.
Look, I think he should watch it.
Okay.
If I was Andrew Fifita, I would at the very least, I'd be curious as to how the team's going to go. And considering that, he's been there for a few years already, a lot of these are his mates. Surely he'd want to see them perform at the highest level again, in that sort of rivalry against Queensland. Surely he'd want to see how they perform and barrack for them, and not really think about it in an egotistical way, what I could have done, or did I make the right decision, or that kind of thing. I think if possible, if anyone knows Andrew Fifita, I would say get into his ear and just say, look, let's come over to my place. Let's watch it as a group. Maybe you could do it as a bit of a group therapy thing. If he's not willing to sort of, face the monster himself, maybe you can do it with the support of the 12-step program and his support crew. Maybe he could be invited over to a bit of a barbecue dinner while watching with his mates, just watching State of Origin together. Maybe that's one way to do it. So I would say anyone with any influence in his life should really get him onto watching it, because I'll tell you what, even more than that, I reckon he should record a video message, and then at halftime when we're inevitably losing against the Maroons, Freddie Fittler should pull open the curtains, bring out the TV trolley on the trolley, and press play on the VCR and show everyone that Andrew Fifita is sending them his love and his support, and that he'll be watching them from home. That will really fire them up, I think. So I think more than that, I think he should be involved in sending a message to the team that he's still thinking about them. What do you reckon, Tish? Are you gonna vote for the opposite?
Yes. So why should Mr. Fifita not watch State of Origin? Well, four words for Mr. Fifita: Game of Thrones binge.
It's okay.
You know, he is a rugby league player, had so much time away, but you know, he's probably, has an automatic sort of sign up on his Netflix account. Luke Cage season 2 coming up on Netflix, you know. Plenty of things to watch. You know, MKR is back on television. You know, Andrew Fifita spending time with his family. I'm for families, Dr. T. Don't know if you are or not, but I am. and look, no, but quite honestly, I think Andrew, look, he made a decision to play for Tonga. I think it's something that he definitely wants to stick to. And I could see where watching a State of Origin game, and particularly seeing maybe, the not so best performance from New South Wales, or seeing something that happened, that would probably stir up something inside of him, for him to go out there and put on the boots again for New South Wales. And then, you know, he'll probably regret it, you know, the next time Tonga is to play. So I don't think he wants to, I think watching the game might be a bit painful, because, you know, he it's a huge sacrifice that he made to play for Tonga. And I think that maybe watching the game itself might be just emotionally a bit draining for him. So, you know, the best advice I could give you is Game of Thrones binge night, Andrew. I think that's what you need to do on our Origin. Just so you're completely away from it, you know what I mean? Maybe just change your clocks and change your calendars so it doesn't even feel like that's actually Wednesday, you know? Do your Thursday schedule instead of your Wednesday schedule, and just so you've got, you know, complete exoneration for State of Origin. I think that would be the way to go, Andrew, otherwise, you know, you watch State of Origin and then you're going to backflip and go in, and you know, what's going to happen? You're going to ask to play for New South Wales, you're going to play New South Wales, you're going to drop the ball, we're going to lose another series, and I think you're better off with Tonga.
Well, if you're joining us, that's some practical advice there from Tish on how to what other things Andrew Fifita or anyone could do instead of watching State of Origin. But, of course, we do not encourage that. We encourage everyone to watch State of Origin to make it the most watched TV program of the year, of course. We get three opportunities to do it. Usually games 1 and 2 are the ones where we hit those highs. High numbers, in terms of, yeah. So I would encourage, at least for games 1 and 2, Andrew Fifita, we need you. Get going. But, look, obviously Tisha's given you some practical advice of what else you could do. Why not do both? Why not go and visit some friends, watch a bit of the game? If we start losing it before halftime and you want to give up, do a bit of old switcheroo and put some Game of Thrones on. I recommend the last season, probably the second last episode. So see what you can do. But look, that was a bit of fun. But let's move on to perhaps a bit of a more serious one. Tackle number 3. All right, so this one is a hard one to describe, but the Great Mate Debate Part 3, this is about, was the Broncos' Jermaine Isacco controversial knockback decision actually a knock-on? So basically, for those of you who don't know, and you really do need to see this because it's hard to explain, but there was an incident in the Broncos-Bulldogs match which which sent a lot of people on the internet in a bit of a craze, where the ball was dropped. It was a kind of like a bomb was sent towards Isacco's position on the field. He jumped up, and if you can imagine, let me try and describe this, Tish, before we continue. But if you can imagine, he was jumping, but he was jumping backwards. So let's just say he started on, you know, the 25-meter line. Not that there is a line anymore, but let's just say 25 meters. And he jumped, but he was kind of in the process of running backwards, if that makes sense. So he jumped up, and on his downward trajectory, on his downward motion, he attempted to catch the ball, and the ball kind of went backwards off him, but he ended up going even further backwards than the ball, if that makes sense. So by the time he landed, he would have been, you know, in my example, he would have been on the 20-meter line, whereas the ball would have gone, bounced backwards from the time where he touched it up in the air at around the 25-meter mark, gone backwards, landed on, say, the 21-meter mark, and bounced. He gave himself up thinking that it was a knock-on because he had landed behind the where the ball landed. So you might sort of say, well, it's in front of me, therefore I've knocked it on. It was actually called knock back. I've had a look at this many, many times on the video replay. I'm not sure if those of you out there have or if you have, Tish, but it's a really difficult one to describe. And I think on the face of it, I think most people that I've seen commenting on the internet are suggesting it was knocked back. The official description by the referees was that since he touched the ball at a certain plane, say at the 25-meter line, and it landed on the 20-meter line or something like that, therefore it went backwards, it's counted as a knockback. My question, though, is, how much do we need to bring in Physics 101 here to explain what happened? And secondly, how is this different to, or things to consider, how is this different to when, you know, that whole thing about when you throw the pass forward, it might not be a forward pass because relative to the runner passed it behind them, but because of their momentum, the ball carried forward. So if you just did it on the basis of the point at which the ball left the runner's hands to the point at which it was caught by their teammate, that may have gone forward. However, relative to the momentum of the runner, it may have actually gone backwards, like it was propelled backwards, if you know what I mean. So, Tish, you know, I don't know where you want to land on this, but I thought it would be worth maybe debating. So I'm going to suggest that I want to argue that it actually was a knock-on.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to argue it first or...
Oh, no, look, why don't you go for it? I'll go
first? Much
explained. Yep.
Yeah. Look, hopefully it will be such a good argument, Tish, that you won't need to argue anything. I'm hoping it's a slam dunk. So here we go. Look, I just sort of gave the example of the forward pass, the flip side of that, which is a forward pass situation, where you could argue, even though the ball has traveled and drifted forward, because it was projected at a backwards trajectory by a forward moving at speed, forward moving player, you can't look at the pure, you know, geolocation coordinates of where the ball left the player's hands and ended up in the other player's hands. You've got to look at it in terms of physics and the motion, the relative motion of the ball to the actual runner. In this case, the Jermaine Isacco wasn't a runner. He was in the process of catching it. So the way I see it is that if you were to agree with, if you were to not understand physics, you would say, as the referees did, that the ball travelled backwards. However, when you look at the way he tried to grasp for the ball, it was kind of projected forward from his hands, but because he was moving backwards at a faster rate than the ball was moving backwards after he had initially propelled it forward, it ended up going backwards not as much as he did, if that makes sense. So it's kind of like, you know, the argument of, you know, if you try to sort of either ride a bike or throw, you know, in a car and say you're in the car, you're driving in the car and you throw a newspaper like they sometimes do when they deliver your newspaper to your house out the window. If you are kind of, you know, moving forward, if you can imagine yourself, yeah, moving forward, but you throw the ball, throw the newspaper in a backward direction, then that's easy because you're going forward and it's moving backward. However, what if you reverse, if you can imagine reversing in the car and you throw it forward. So you throw the newspaper, you stick your arm out the window and you chuck it up in the air in a forward motion, just as you do when you're throwing a newspaper somewhere. Technically, you are throwing it forward, but because you're reversing the car, if you measure the point at which it left your hand and the point at which it lands, physics tells you that it will always, always end up behind where you actually threw the ball, through the newspaper. And it's the same thing here. He was going backwards. It propelled forward off his hands ever so slightly. But because the ball was coming backwards and he was falling backwards, it ended up, going or appearing or that it was actually moving backwards. I don't know if I've done a good job explaining that to you. It's really hard to explain over a podcast. You really need to see for yourself. And but I do sort of recommend that people, have a look on YouTube of how this actually plays out with, throwing a tennis ball off a moving car or something like that. I think some people have done this. In fact, I think Mythbusters may have done this in one of their episodes where they were talking about, trying to educate people about the physics of it. So I think the physics of it to me suggests that it did actually get propelled forward, even though he was falling backwards. To my mind, the rule is pretty clear. If you propel the ball forward, even if you are moving backwards or whatever you are doing, it doesn't matter. It is a knock-on. So I don't know if you want to provide a counter argument to that, Tish, or if you haven't seen it now, if you agree with my summary of the way he was falling and the way the ball was kind of falling at a slower rate, or we're just going to say let's get the referees to learn physics 101.
Okay. Well, strong arguments, Dr. T. Going back to my old physics days, I'd say that, momentum equals mass times velocity. And, the mass of the football is lower than the mass of James Isako. And then so the ball was also traveling at a slower speed. So I think it appears that the ball went forward, but both were traveling in the same direction. And it's just that there was a greater momentum applied to James Isako's body and with a greater mass, which is why he ended up being behind the ball a lot quicker. So it gives you the illusion that the ball went forward, when in fact the ball was also traveling backwards from his hands. I think that's how I could explain my argument.
The
other thing I am prepared to do is to concede that you are actually absolutely right. I don't know how the referees missed this. It's clearly a drop ball. Like, I don't understand why nothing ever happened. It's, he was trying to catch it. He was not trying to bat it backwards. It clearly went forward off his hands. Even James Asako knows what happened. He kind of stopped thinking to himself, hey, it's a knock on. Do you know what I mean? And then the ref's just saying, no, play on. And he's like kind of a bit stunned. So, wrong call. I have to agree with you. Got really no argument against you there at all, Dr. T.
Yeah. Look, I think it is all about how do you define knock on? Is knock on defined by the ball, went forward and hit the ground from the player? In which case, if you just purely look at it from, he was up in the air at this point, it landed at this point, since point B was behind point A, therefore knocked back. If that's the way you define it, fair enough, which is the way they defined it. But I would argue that that's an incorrect definition of a knock-on. It's about whether you propelled the ball forward. And that's why I'm saying I'm using the counter-argument of, how they talk about, well, you could propel the ball backward when running really fast at pace forward, but by passing it kind of sideways but backwards, but because you're at pace, it travels forward.
Yeah.
But you propelled it backwards. And to me, that's the same exact argument, but flipped this way. When you look at his hands, and this is really what the key is, that the key should be, did you propel it forward from your hands? And he did. And he knew that he did. And just to finish this off, I mean, I think thank you very much for conceding that physics has won the day today. But I think a spare a thought, everyone, for poor old Ben Hunt, who wish he had that referee in that grand final a couple of years ago, to argue that he actually, because I actually looked at. I must be one of the dissenting voices here that actually think that Ben Hunt never actually knocked on that ball from the Cowboys at the kickoff. I think it went backwards. In fact, it slipped straight through his hands. How you could argue that that was a propulsion forward of the ball from his hands is absolutely beyond me. It went backwards. But Ben Hunt will be kicking himself going, where was that referee when I needed him? Anyway.
Exactly.
Well, there you go. All right. Next one, tackle number 4. We got something to announce. Tish, over to you.
Yes, huge announcement. So, Rugby League Republic listeners out there, we would like to thank you all for your continued support of our show. Every week we go back, we look at the statistics, we see that we're growing, see that we're moving forward, we see that we're growing as a community, which is all great to see. And as a result, we thought we want to expand the show by bringing to you a new bonus show. So we're still trying to iron out all the exact details, but coming soon to the Rugby League Republic is a completely brand new show that instead of talking about the current ongoings and offgoings and all the things happening in Rugby League today, this show will be focused on the reflection or the past, that, a reflective look at some of the game's most, controversial and interesting topics over the years. So it's going to be called, we haven't really settled on the name before, but something like Rugby League Republic Reflection or Rugby League Republic Reflective, where we'll take a topic, of the past and we'll look back at it and we'll go long form and dive deep into the whole scenario, the background behind it, the different players involved, the different coaches involved, how it impacted rugby league, whether that's where something like that could work in the modern era, and just have a look back at some of the most interesting and most heavily, some of the most heavily controversial topics that's ever happened in rugby league. Some of the different things we want to reflect on is things such as, the years where, you know, rugby league expanded to, you know, from 12 teams to 16 teams and 16 teams to 20 teams. And, you know, when we went from 5 metre to 10 metre, obviously different aspects of the Super League war, you know, different origin series, different grand finals, different games, different players. We want to go long form on one particular topic and reflect on how that topic, what our thoughts are about the topic and how to do it. So coming soon, more announcements to be made about exactly when, but Rugby League Republic, you know, exciting news. We're expanding in 2018 with a new show, and Dr. T, you looking forward to this new show?
I am, Tish. It's our way of moving forward by looking back. In fact, in fact, we might even call it the knock back instead of the knock on. But look,
the Asako podcast.
That's right. That's right. I'm looking forward to this because, like, this will give us a chance to also deep dive into some of the topics that we keep bringing up. We keep bringing up some of the great sort of games of the past and the great sort of moments or tipping points, the great changes that have happened in the game. We love this game and we've been following it, you know, all of our lives pretty much. But we know as well that if we just focus on the current season and we tend to sort of forget where we've come from and we tend to, you know, unless we either accidentally you see some of the old games, you get stuck in your current worldview. So we wanted to take an opportunity to look back. You know, like I think I spoke recently as well about, you know, going on holiday somewhere and just and seeing. I think we were at a hotel somewhere and we just saw some old early 90s games. I think there was a Canberra Raiders game there somewhere. I think it may have even been a test match. Laurie Daly, Ricky Stewart, those kinds of people were there. And I was just mesmerized by the speed and the quality of the match. None of this kind of what we see nowadays, which is the really boring wrestling going on at the ruck. Like, you got tackled. It was a bit of argy-bargy, but they quickly got up and played the ball. And they played the ball properly. None of this tunnel ball. They actually played the ball properly. And it was fast.
Yes.
And I sort of look at those days and I sort of think, well, where did we go wrong? So sometimes it's good to sort of reflect and look back on the past and see whether we can, you know, bring some insight into how we're enjoying the game now. By what we remember from the past. But I'm looking forward as well to reliving some of those old Origin games because, man, some of those Origin games, they're going to take me back. You know, there's some classics there. And yeah, it's good to sometimes look back at some of the great ones. So I think what we should do is we've got many great ideas about how we're gonna do this and what kinds of things we want to look back on. But, you know, whether it's historical changes to the game, rule changes, or classic encounters. But let's open it up as well. If anyone out there has got any ideas, please email us at rrepublic@gmail.com. rrepublic@gmail.com. I'll say again without interruption. But yeah, or just drop us a line somehow there and let us know what you think. Any ideas that you've got, how we can, or even on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, send us a message and post something and just let us know what you think because, you know, we want to make sure that we give you guys what you want and not just what we think are the classic games. Because Tish, I've got to be honest, if it was up to me, I'd just talk about the 86 grand final. the Great Eels grand finals. That's all I'll talk about. Those are the classic games for me.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, there are so many great grand finals as well. So, we're happy to look at anything and everything.
Yeah.
So, Tish, this is a really good announcement. We're yet to finalize the name as well, but you know, no doubt we'll let you know.
We'll come up with something. And you know what? Like, we've got a couple of topics that we want to, I think, sort of start off with. But you know, down the track, I do see us potentially having a poll up for you guys to maybe take a vote. We might throw four games up there, and if you got a game, yeah, certainly request it. We might want to cover that, put it on a poll, see if there's other people that want to listen to it, and yeah, let's go back in time to some of the most fondest memories of our childhood and of our adulthood. As we look back at the greatest game of all, I think it would be fantastic.
Yeah, looking back at the early days of the Republic. the ancient look at the Republic. All right, so tackle number five. All right, this is about the NRL Hall of Fame 2018 picks, and we talked about this last week, and we sort of decided that we'd have our own sort of separate looks at the list, a great list, and maybe it's worth sort of going through the whole list right now, and then we can talk about which ones are our list and see how we go. What do you reckon? I'll quickly name all of them.
Absolutely, go for it.
All right, so here we go. We've got Bobby Lindner, we've got Cliffy Lyons, Craig Young, Danny Badiris, Dennis Flannery, Elwin Walters, Gordon Tallis, Greg Alexander, Ian Moyer, Jack Bluey Watkins, Kevin Walters, Mark Graham, Michael O'Connor, Paul Harrigan, Peter Diamond, Petro Sivanasiva, Ricky Stewart, Rod Reddy, Ron Lynch, Royce Simmons, and I think Ruben Wickey, and Stacey Jones, and Steve Menzies, and Steve Renoff, and Wally O'Connell. That's it. So that's 25 that were nominated. So let's have a look at which ones. So Tish, do you have a list that you want to go with as your list?
Okay, well, look, you did reveal to me earlier your list, so I'm gonna give you.
Somewhat. I've had a chance to rethink that actually.
Okay. Yeah. Look, but what I'll say, and I named some of these players last week, but look, I think I'll go with Steve Renoff, Ricky Stewart, Steve Menzies, Pedro Sivanasiva, Pedro, Stacey Jones. And Cliff Lyons, and I think that would be my pick. And it's somewhat unfair to some of the players that I probably didn't have a chance to see. You know, there's reports about players like Bobby Lindner, for instance, Ian Moyer, and things like that, who are apparently fantastic players. And you know, I probably saw one or two of their games, but more of the back end of their careers. Obviously, there are players here that played a long time ago, and there's probably not even any footage to see how good they're playing, you know, and some of those people will miss out. But, you know, I also look at, like, you know, also was reading back at some of the statistics, and even saw a guy like Rod Reddy, for instance, who I didn't have on my list, but seemed to be, quite a pioneer in his role in the game. But that's basically the list. And you know, I think I was just with all of these players. I mean, Steve Renouf, he was arguably the best player in his position. I think he kind of changed the way that the position was sort of viewed. Ricky Stewart, I think is hands down. I'm really surprised he's not already in the Hall of Fame. And it's kind of interesting. It's actually, I'd say the main reason why is that if you think about that Canberra's lineup, in 1993, they were the minor premiers, and then Ricky Stewart got injured 7 weeks out before the finals, and they did not win a game for the rest of the season. And that was a team that had people that are already in the actual Hall of Fame, like Laurie Daly and Mal Meninga and so forth. So, despite those players playing, without Ricky Stewart, they couldn't do it. You know, Stacey Jones, I think he's a pioneer in New Zealand Rugby League. I think he's laid a platform for their success now, and I think really great to have an international player there. I think Pedro, a similar sort of thing with what he's done with Fiji, but also a great player for Queensland, great player for Australia. Steve Menzies, you know, the way second rounds play, it's different. And Cliff Lyons is the, he's the guy that that gives an opportunity for players later on in their career to still have fantastic success. He won the Dally M medal twice. He's a Rothmans medalist. He played in three grand finals in a row, and that was all in the back end of his career. Just an amazing player, and I think he was well into his 50s still playing sort of football out in the country. So I think not just for his playing career, but also for his legacy that he's left the game. So that's my six that I'd have this year. Dr. T, who was your six and why?
Yeah, look, I've got to say, straight off the bat, I agree with four of them.
So, okay.
Thankfully, we don't have too many points of disagreement. I'll tell you the ones I do agree with. Steve Renoff.
Yep.
Ricky Stewart.
Yep.
Stacey Jones.
Yes.
And Steve Menzies. So we talked about those four last week, and especially Menzies, I think. You didn't have him on your list last week.
I'm
glad that you've now looked carefully at his legacy and realized how important he was. But the two that I'm going to replace with your one, so you put Petros Ivanisiva and Cliffy Lyons. I'm going to revert back to the one for Cliffy. I'm going to take him out. Unfortunately, like, I think he did some great, wonderful things, but I think a player who sort of achieved more and was more crucial and important for his team's success over a prolonged period, and also was just more individually, had more individual kind of accolades as well, was Greg Alexander. I think, that's not to say I wouldn't, you know, if this list was expanded to seven, I'd put Cliffy Lyons next. That's how close he was to making this list. But if I was to choose, I'd put Greg Alexander there. Petros Ivanisiva, likewise, did, you know, nothing particularly wrong with any of these players. They've all achieved absolutely wonderful, great things. And he was part of the, you know, the recent sort of success with Queensland and the Broncos and all that sort of thing. But there was one player which is often gets overlooked and certainly got overlooked. But the more I sort of looked at and from what I remember of him and how important he was, I'd have to go with Mark Graham from New Zealand. Mark Graham, according to the information that we've got here, you know, not only was, you know, an important, you know, played 28 tests for the Kiwis. You know, in terms of achievements, well, he was a stalwart for the Bears. But the Bears, of course, never won. The North Sydney Bears won anything in the Sydney competition as it was back then in the early 80s. But, excuse me, but he holds a very important title. He was named New Zealand's Player of the Century last century. And I think that's not to be sneezed at when you've got so many brilliant players that played during that period. And this was just prior to the Stacey Jones kind of era. Or just when Stacey Jones kind of hit his peak in terms of the turn of the century. So that's a pretty big deal for the New Zealanders themselves to say that Mark Graham was their player of the century. You got to remember that even though we've got used to New Zealand sort of, or at least in recent years, being an equal to the Australian Kangaroos, at that time when the Kiwis defeated Australia 18-0 in Auckland, the Kiwis back then really gave Australia a run for their money at a time when the Australians were, you know, as dominant or if not more dominant in the world stage. Remembering they had two, you know, undefeated Kangaroo tours, 82 and 86, around that time. And so imagine at that time when they were undefeated against all of the English teams that they played against, who themselves were very competitive. It wasn't like, you know, they were all close matches. You had New Zealand also putting it to Australia, even though they had, you know, less stars, fewer stars. I would vote for Mark Graham in that. So I'm, you know, we don't have to agree. We can agree to disagree.
Mm.
But I've got to say that before we sort of close this one off, two honourable mentions, I've got to say, for players in my book that almost made it but didn't quite. Bobby Lindner was quite an important player, I think, in shaping the role, the new role of the lock forward position. Mm-hmm. in a way, I think he paved the way for Bradley Clyde and his style of playing in the early 90s. And I think he was, you know, yeah, he didn't have as many sort of individual accolades as some of the halfbacks and all that kind of thing. But he was considered a real key player in most of those Queensland, you know, performances in the late 80s. So I think he just misses out compared to some of the others that are on this list. But also Michael O'Connor, like, he didn't have much of a long career in rugby league, but he had such an impactful career in rugby league, having come from rugby union, quickly sort of made his mark on, you know, there were so many classic, you know, we can relive this in our new podcast episodes, but in our review of great State of Origin matches. But I distinctly remember one of the great ones where he won us a game by kicking
on the sideline,
an amazing, yeah, sideline conversion. But it wasn't just his goal kicking. He was, you know, really, really dependable on the wing. And that's why he was named, you know, on the wing for the Manly side's, you know, team of the last 60 years or team of the century, whatever it was. So he also sort of got accolades from his club for the contribution he made. Of course, he was the reason why, you know, they won in 87 and continued to sort of dominate in the early 90s. Even after he retired, his presence was felt, and his sort of, you know, he was a very important part of those winning teams. So, yeah, he just misses out, I think, because he didn't really have as much of a long, distinguished career as some of the others that we've selected. So, yeah, look, I look forward to seeing what happens, you know, in the actual ballot, in the actual sort of announcement later in the year. But, Dish, is there any other ones you want to nominate? Any ones that missed out for you?
Well, I was just going to say that I think that what will happen is that probably the 25 that we're seeing on the ballot this year, I think a lot of them will eventually get in. But it will be interesting to see when newer players become eligible, where some of these players fit. And I think, you know, at the moment, you know, we've all picked, you know, fairly recent era players only because of the knowledge. But what I hope this process does is it does bring to light maybe perhaps some of the players of yesteryear that we don't have that much footage or knowledge about, but maybe some of their aspects of their career to be highlighted a little bit. I think that will certainly help us, you know, remember the game a bit more and bring that heritage to the, you know, there's an untapped heritage to the game, basically. And, you know, there's not enough attention given to it sometimes. And I just hope that this whole process will actually bring about that. I think it will bring about that. And I'm just looking forward to it. And I've got to say, all 25 worthy contenders, we could do a reflective show on each one of these players. So I don't want to mention any other players that I think it's there. I think there is a bit of a danger sometimes of just focusing on the fullbacks, the 5'8s, the halfbacks, and the dummy halves. But, you know, we need to put the front rows, the second rows, the locks, the, you know, the centres in there as well. I don't think it should just be about the players themselves. I think it should also be about administrators, coaches, and, you know, other people in, you know, not just taking a look at their legacy on the field, but their legacy off the field as well. I really hope that comes into consideration as well.
All right, well said. Final tackle number 6. Got there eventually.
Yep.
All right, our tips for round 10. And so, look, before we continue, just a review of what we got correct in round 9. So you got 3 out of 8, and I got 6 out of 8. So I'm clawing my way back.
Wow.
I'm up to 35, but you're still ahead on 37 points. So let's get into NRL round 10.
Mm-hmm.
Tigers versus Cowboys. I think the Tigers will bounce back. So I'm going to tip the Tigers.
Yeah, look, I think so too. JT's nightmare, like Art Oval. Let's give him more nightmares.
That's right. The Knights versus the Panthers. I think the Panthers will bounce back.
Yeah, look, a really tough one, but look, I think the Knights have got too many injuries at the moment, so I think the Panthers will win, even though they've got quite a lot of injuries, so yeah.
All right, the Eels versus the Bulldogs. Look, I think the Eels, they need to win this one, and I think when they need to win, they usually do put some extra effort. So I'm going to go for the Eels.
Okay, yes. Look, traditional rivalry, probably one of the biggest rivalries, arguably the biggest rivalry at the moment, and on just any given week, right? But coming back to the Bulldogs and the Eels have certainly improved, but I am going to go for the Bulldogs because I think they've actually improved, and maybe last week's controversial game is going to inspire them to win.
That's fair enough. Warriors versus Roosters. So, look, the Warriors have already proven by defeating the Dragons that they can match it with anyone in a comp. And now they're at home to the Roosters, who were premiership favourites at the beginning but aren't anymore. So it should be interesting, but I'm actually going to tip the Warriors. I think the Warriors will reiterate again that they're up there as premiership, one of the premiership favourites.
Yep, look, a couple of injuries towards the back half of the Warriors game, and the fact that the Roosters seem to be gelling a bit better. I think the Roosters are a better team than where they are at the moment, and I think that they'll win, where I think the Warriors, yeah, just not quite there yet. I think Stacey Jones might be out, which, not Stacey,
Stacey Jones. Stacey
Jones,
what?
Anyway.
Sean Johnson, you mean?
Sean Johnson could be out with an injury, and I think even Isaac Luke, so that's why I'm tipping the Roosters.
All right. I still think that they've got enough to cover, but anyway.
Yeah.
Storm versus Titans. I don't know about the Titans this year. They're up and down, but I think the Storm will bounce back, so the Storm will win that one.
Yeah. Well, look, the Storm, they dropped their halfback earlier in the season and has proven great success. The Titans are going for a similar tactic and dropping both their halves, but I still think the Storm will win, so Storm for mine on that one.
Seagulls versus Broncos. So, look, I'm tipping the Broncos, but not too much confidence. I mean, look at the previous game. They only just squeaked past the Bulldogs 22-20, and really Manly only lost to the Roosters 22-20. Ironically, the same score. So it's hard to tell. Look, I think the Broncos, just because I think they've been playing better so far this year, and Seagulls with all the internal sort of turmoil, I'm not sure what they're doing. So I'm tipping against them. So what do you think?
Well, look, I think this game is certainly unusual for Brisbane because they're playing on a Saturday, which is unusual for them.
Wow.
And the new time, I'm just going to say, maybe playing on a Saturday is going to have a factor. And DCE, look, the Sea Eagles, they're another team where their talent is actually quite great. So I'm going to tip the Sea Eagles to put it all together against the Broncos.
Well, you are brave. Looks like I'm going to catch up sooner than I realised.
Right, okay.
Rabbitohs versus Dragons. This, again, could be a tough one because the Rabbitohs have been, quietly plodding along, winning some games that you wouldn't expect them to win, but also losing some of the ones you do. So I'm not sure what to think of them, but the Dragons are on a high, and I think they will win this one.
Yeah. Well, another team that's also been winning games that you didn't necessarily expect them to is the Dragons. They're actually winning everything at the moment. So, look, I'm going to tip the Dragons to continue their dominance. And I think the Rabbitohs need Robbie Farah. Bring him back into the lineup, I think.
Fair enough. Raiders versus the Sharks. So, this is the last one. Look, a tough one. It's Ricky Stewart against his old team. And
sorry about that.
I guess it does.
Bell's going crazy.
It does warrant ringing of the bell. I'm going to tip the Raiders.
Okay. Look, great, interesting tip. If they are at home, you know what? The Sharks, they have to start putting together, and I think they're Sharks are mine. You might be catching up. Or I might be streaking through, but there's quite a few differences between what we think about what's going to happen in round 10, which makes the NRL so exciting. And when is Origin coming up? That's coming up in a few weeks, isn't it?
It is coming up in a few weeks, so that should be exciting. No doubt we'll talk a bit more about the Origin selections and the controversies and, all sorts of things. But look, that's it for the tips, and that's it for this episode. Don't forget to keep listening to our podcasts on iTunes. Check us out on ararepublic.com and email us at ararepublic@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook as well. Please like and share our page so that you know many more people get to hear about us and hear about when we drop a podcast episode. We have enjoyed bringing this to you. Tish, it's over to you to wrap this one up.
Well, thank you, Dr. T, for another great episode of the Rugby League Republic. Thank you all for listening. I hope you guys have enjoyed it as much as we have bringing it to you. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have on this edition of the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.